SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the fairgrounds in New Orleans, one last morning. After a spectacular, and I mean spectacular, Louisiana Derby Day, and of course not just limited to Saturday, not just limited to what was going on here, but up at Florence, at Turfway Park, equally interesting and exciting, from what I can tell. Certainly wasn't lucrative. whatever you won at fairgrounds was easy to give back up at Turfway. I'll tell that story because every time you went, when we were going back and forth from the track for the races here, and to go watch the screen, you know, during the stakes sequence at Turfway, it was like, ooh. And then you go back out at fairgrounds, and other than Red Route 1, had some good ideas, but would then come back and watch Turfway and be like, oh, my God. And you have to regroup. Really fun. I hope everybody enjoyed the Saturday as much as certainly the people did here. This was as crowded a day here, and you know, certainly weather contributes. But I've been to, I guess this is what, my second Louisiana Derby, and probably five Risen Star days. I'll have to go back and review, but the place was absolutely packed, and it was an excited crowd. It was high energy here. I could not have come away more, you know, just delighted, really, by a day at the races. The results we'll talk about, obviously. We'll get Brad Cox, we'll talk to late in the show. Last guest. I knew yesterday, and of course yesterday, closing day, the 15 race card that closed out, you know, with emotion, the Chantal Lannery race, and Casey Palmier and Corey Lannery combining to, you know, send everybody home with a smile and with a tear, obviously. And then the second line celebration. This is Mike Diliberto is going to join us when he finishes clocking. There's horses that are hanging around, and it'll be easier for, you know, the Louisiana based trainers, including Shane Wilson, who just had a remarkable meet, his first training title at the fairgrounds. I invited him up here, but we may end up doing it by phone. But yesterday I knew that when I didn't see Brad Cox, he had a horse in the third, I think. And when I saw he wasn't here, I said, he's on his way back to the Ville. And indeed, when I reached him, he was already on the road back to Kentucky. And so we'll talk to Brad by phone. But Mikey Diliberto is going to come up after training hours, probably in about an hour. And I'm looking for him to regale us with fun stories. Tina and I have a running gag wherever we go, whether it's vacation or whether it's racing related attendance, where we drive around a town and we say, we could live here. And she mostly agrees with me when I say it. And once in a while, she'll say it. But I'll tell you what, it would not take much convincing to get me to. This is such a fabulous city, and it's one of those places that, you know, you're just traveling around the town, and you in neighborhoods and I have neighborhoody cities are my favorite. I lived in Cincinnati, which is very neighborhood driven. Kansas City too, but you just go from neighborhood to neighborhood here, and you see streets and little nooks that are just, I mean, so charming and, you know, picturesque. Then you got all the entertainment factors, of course, Frenchman Street and the French Quarter, and there's just so much happening. And then, of course, the dining, forget about it. The dining situation is over the top. And I do have some new, thanks to McGoey, we do have a new addition to the roster. After the races on Saturday, we went to Crescent City Steaks, which has been around since, I want to say, 1936, I think. Is that what was that the number? With his man O'Keefe and his son, we just had such a great time. And one thing that I've, over the years here, that I've managed to appreciate is, you know, finding spots that are way more local than they are, you know, touristy. And there's nothing wrong with the touristy. I mean, and they're, you know, the most famous joints that, you know, the Brennan family and Emeril and the late Paul Prudhomme. And of course, I mean, the absolute jewel on the crown is Brightson's. Frank's just unbelievable there Friday night. But finding the more local spots. So, you know, several years ago, I think the first trip, actually, Tina and I ended up finding the Cottage Inn, the College Inn, and Cottage Inn is Louisville. We go there every year now. But this Crescent City Steaks, which is right on Broad, you know, literally less than a mile from the track, you know, it's not going to be on, you know, the guidebook lists. I mean, we had standard steakhouse fare, just, you know, perfectly done and simple, and lots of laughs. When Mikey DiLiberto comes up, you'll get the feel. He's been on once before when I broadcast from the lobby downstairs, and I grabbed him. But this will be opportune. This town, and I'll discuss it with him. What really works here, and I suppose it's a lesson for racing. What really works here is that the horseplay and the atmosphere and the tradition here, it's ingrained in the community. It's not, you know, it's not just a, you know, a sideshow or you know, just something that certain people go to and or seasonal. You get the sense here that at no time has horseplay and racing and the racetrack atmosphere and racetrackers have they ever been, you know, looked down on or thought of as a, you know, less than honorable endeavor. In fact, something tells me that it's always been celebrated in that regard. And I've talked about this before. That you know, one of the game's charms is, you know, it's seamy, seamy underbelly at times. In this town, it's just part of the culture, and so it makes for a special atmosphere on the big days. I mean, I was going to write something along these lines when I tweeted about the Derby and put up that little vid of, you know, the finish of catching Freedom and Honor Marie, and them rushing headlong to the wire. The race was very good, and this race is going to be very productive. We'll talk about it in a minute. I wanted to convey just how it was the kind of day that made the challenges that the game faces, it kind of made those go away. It completely on the periphery, and not, you wouldn't know there was a problem to be addressed in any arena if you were here Saturday. And I hope it was that way at Turfway as well, and anywhere else that there was a crowd of racegoers assembled. So really just start to finish. I'll say this too. The day went by in a hurry. And even yesterday, which was much more relaxed. The day after a big day is always tough. It's always tough on the horsemen. It's tough on the staff. And of course, they didn't need as many staffers, but it got busy here. I was surprised at one point. I think I went down for the fourth for Declan Carroll's last race, and Michelle Lovell with a huge win. She drew in on the off the AE list and promptly won. And then came back upstairs for a little bit and was doing some work in advance of the week. And then when I went down again around the seventh mid card, it had gotten busy. The dining rooms had gotten busy again. So, it wasn't Louisiana Derby day per se, but it was active and brisk. And there were some, how about the prices yesterday? Well, did anybody, dig in and come back? And there was a sequence starting around, I guess it was the second or the third. In fact, I think I have it. I should have it. Where the fur started to fly, including Michelle Lovell's horse, who was 23-1. You had, it was with the second race. Mean American paid 20.60. Then Beer with Ice, and Joe, I was with Joe Christofek, and Joe is watching this horse pull away in the stretch, and Joe's like, oh my God. He said, I bet this horse last time, and at a price, and sure enough, this is when he puts it together. Actually, a Calbred, it's a Calbred, Peggy Thompson, a Stay Thirsty, Beer with Ice, paid $74.40, and then Michelle with her horse, Debt Paid, and we watched the race together, and she said, I like my horse in here, if he can work out a trip, and got a tremendous ride from Rodriguez, and paid $49, so what'd the pick three? The pick three paid $6,279. How great is that? And then by the time we got to the $26 winner of the fifth, the pick five was a single winner, $82,168. The pick four was two winners, paid $21,900. Crazy. And that second pick three paid $5,400. So it was wild. that sequence. I mentioned Shane Wilson, and of course he closed out the meet with a pair of big wins in the Paige Cortez and that star guitar for Miss Evelyn, for Britlin, Overcharged, who just doesn't stop winning, and Behemoth Star. And they both, you know, they both figured very heavily and obviously. And the whole meet, as I mentioned, Casey Palmier and Corey Lannery with that Free Like a Girl. She wins again at 3-5 to close out the meet. And it was a very, very good season here. It took a few seasons to smooth out that turf course and the like, but they had a very good meet here. They raised purses a couple of times, and it was a very, very good winter. And everybody seemed to be leaving in good spirits. So there's so much fun here. Now, to talk about the weekend a little bit more, and by the way, Sirius 162 XM 207 Sports Zone 964 if you're listening on Sirius Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. To start looking at the weekend, the Saturday cards and the big results, we'll talk to Michael W. McCarthy in California, obviously. He texted with Michael while he was en route home. But Endlessly, who capped a spectacular day for Millridge Farms and for Oscar Performance. Three wins, two stakes, and the maiden that opened the card for Cherie DeVoe. In fact, when I walked in to the track, Cherie had a horse in the paddock, and she was watching the race at Turfway. Big day. I mean, Oscar Performance just, you know, now he's got these three-year-olds, and they're just getting better and better. It's a story. We'll bring that up with Sid. We've talked about him, but we'll bring it up with Sid again on Wednesday. But Endlessly, for the Ammermans, and Michael W. McCarthy saying, well, yeah, we're going to run at Churchill in the American turf. he's not rushing off all excited to run in the Derby. And it's the practical approach, and probably, you know, the right one. So that's being hailed as a practical decision. Endlessly was, I mean, just so confidently handled in this by Rispoli. And he actually, at 3-2, he was not a terrible bet for a 488. I mean, he obviously had to respect him. West Saratoga is a fun story. And I know some people are saying, why would they? Well, you know what? Why wouldn't you? And to be honest, delighted for this team, because we got to know him a little bit when we presented the trophy at the Iroquois. And West Saratoga now, you know, what's he done? Let me see. What was this worth? This was worth $136,000. So you put it together. He's made $450,000. He was an $11,000 Keeneland yearling. Yeah. Harry Verucci, the owner from not from Eloy, Arizona, but living in Eloy, Arizona. And, here's a horse. There's actually a couple of horses heading back to Churchill. He'll train at Keeneland, per Larry Demerit. And, this is a horse that has a stake win at Churchill. And don't discount that. So, West Saratoga, the Exaggerator, out of the Uncle Mo Mare, Two Hearts Farm bred, and we're looking forward to. We had Larry on obviously after the Iroquois, but looking forward to maybe to talking to Harry Verrucci as well. They're rightly excited to have enough points to go to the Derby, and it's kind of it's a very nice story, and it'll be well received and publicized. Seize the Gray ran okay. It ran kind of evenly to be third. Got some more points. And so where does that leave him, actually, on the point front, which I do have? I have the there we go. Seize the Gray's got 27 points. And sitting 15th, which would be 14th if you cross out endlessly, West Saratoga was 67. That's safely. Seize the Gray, Lucas is going to have to sweat this out a little bit, 27, and get through the next two weekends. We'll see. We'll see. Obviously, the Bluegrass is going to, but most of the big Bluegrass names are above him anyway. So if they garner points, if I had to guess right now, if I had to say, is 27 enough to get in? I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that is going to get you in. That might be the bottom marker, the toehold. We'll see. Yeah, there might be some anxious moments, but I think that'll work. Triple Espresso, who of course had to leave wide after basically drawing in, was fourth, and that there's a little bit of a story here because Team Pletcher is a little got to be a little concerned about their situation because Fierceness obviously Saturday in the Florida Derby, and it looks like Tuscan Sky and BU in the Wood, but as of right now, Fierceness basically needs a board hit of any kind. Doesn't really have to win. He's got 36 points, so a board hit will advance Fierceness. At first glance, Team Pletcher needs some help. Needs to step up here in these last couple of big opportunities. Just putting it out there. Looking forward to talking to Eric Foster. What a nice winter he's had at Turfway and Everland. This is a great story too. That Saturday, that's what was so much fun about Saturday. 11-1 on Everland, and it's funny, both winners of the 2 3-year-old races came from wide posts, and it seemed like that it was a good place to be. Where is my I thought I had a winner with Winnable, to be honest, most of the way around. Yeah, I 9-1, and I that was the kind of day it was at Turfway. I'm watching Winnable takes over, and I'm thinking, all right, this will be all right, and then until it wasn't, until Everland came rolling. This is a claim, and a $30,000 claim by Eric Foster, and he's got a partner, William Wargle. Eric Foster, you know, continues to do a nice job. What's amazing about this claim? This is a Strawbridge Augustine homebred out of a Tappet mare by Arrogate. So there's all kinds of there's all kinds of quality on the top end, and for $30,000, Foster, even if this filly didn't turn into the Bourbonnet Oaks winner, this was still a valuable claim with all kinds of residual to her, because that dam ever changing out of Rainbow View, who herself, Dynaformer mare, daughter of the millionaire, no matter what. Unbelievable. Rainbow View, millionaire, 7-time winner, Shepherd. She out of no matter what, who was by Nureyev. Crazy good female family. So a $30,000 claim that was going to be valuable no matter what. And now she's, not a graded stake winner, because the Bourbonnet isn't graded right now. But you got to love these stories. Actually, the horse, the claim that ran in the Ruby ran okay. The one that Michelle Lovell bred, Woodcourt. Right? Wasn't he? I think he was 30. It was a $30,000 claim as well. We talked about him during the week leading in, right? Was he? He was a $50,000 claim off Cotter Racing. And fifth? Sixth. He ended up sixth. But he's certainly a nice horse. And he's already won for the Contreras team. Contreras claimed that horse for himself. So the 2 3-year-old events, Endlessly and Everland, and the Ruby and the Oaks, and Cellist. Cellist was a nice winner for another graded stake win for Rusty. Luis Saez aboard. Abel Cedillo on Everland. And then in the other three stakes, Tricari, the other Oscar performance, also with Rispoli for Grand Motion, and Latonia winner, Dana's Beauty. This was another spot, a Turfway that got me. I tried that Forever After All, and at a big price, and she came late. So that's there was a lot of that going on at Turfway, but it makes it fun. You have to have kind of a different, you have to have a different mindset, essentially, right? To keep firing at Turfway, you gotta keep telling yourself it's gonna only take one. It's only gonna take one. So and then finally, Okiro, a Yoshida for Jose Garofalo, won the Animal Kingdom. So that was the stakes action. coming over here, let's dig in to what transpired on this oval, and we'll work our way back from the Derby. I actually walked out of the track. And as I was going out with Steve Asmus, and I said, "What do you think? What did you learn anything definitive?" And he kind of shrugged and he said, "Well, we'll see. We'll see how he is, and make a decision." He certainly ran credibly again. I mean, he got beat, what, 2 lengths for everything. He and Tuscan Gold, Chad's horse, And that's why I said that this is going to be, this feels like it's going to be a very productive, certainly the top half of the chart. This didn't completely collapse, even though you had horses come from far back, far-ish back. Catching Freedom was last, essentially. And tremendous call by Dooley. Dooley saw the whole field clearly. And Anna Marie was actually second to last after a half mile. But the splits were just were even, were square. And Pratt, you know, made the, I wouldn't say he made the last move. I watched it again this morning because, you know, your tendency is to watch the front half of the field. And so I wanted to watch the back half of the field. And Ben Curtis sort of reacted. He was finding position at the back of the pack with Honor Marie when Pratt made his wide move off the turn. And Curtis actually, you know, came abreast of Catching Freedom, and or you could say it the other way, Catching Freedom came abreast of Anna Marie, and they traveled together. With Anna Marie, you know, not able to stay with Catching Freedom in the final strides, but absolutely running I wouldn't even limit it to credible race. He ran a very good race. And I talked to a couple of people Saturday night and yesterday. I said, it won't take much. We'll watch how the horses train when we get to Churchill. But those of you that like Anna Marie, you've got something to build on, without a doubt. And he feels in a Derby to this point, you know, obviously we got Arkansas, we got Florida, we got the Japanese horse in UAE Derby Saturday. Then Bluegrass Wood, Santa Anita. So you got six races to run. But it does feel right now like your best candidates, the Derby prospects that have done the most to build their resumes, it does feel like it's horses that are coming from off the pace. So here's two more, obviously, Catching Freedom and Anna Marie. And of that ilk, Anna Marie feels like one that's got just a dash more lick. He's got just a skosh more tactical foot to be utilized. You know, doesn't have to languish and come with the one run. Feels like he can be, that he's got, you know, maybe two moves in him. That's the way I sort of came away with watching this a couple of different times. Tuscan Gold stepped forward. Track Phantom. I think that, you know, we keep bringing up the Epicenter comparison. Basically, Steve Asmussen and Blasi and the team have 5 weeks to maybe get him to, you know, to maybe be a little bit more rateable, maybe, you know, be able to met out the speed a little differently. Now, this is a mile and 3/16ths, don't forget. This is as close as anybody, well, the UAE, but this is as close as anybody's getting to a mile and a quarter before May 4th. And by the way, I don't know if you want to take it. I wouldn't necessarily take it as a sign. But Anna Marie fans, if you're coming to Derby, bring a birthday cake because that's when Anna Marie turns three. May 4th. A May 4th foal. So he is doing all this despite being, without digging all the way through. For instance, Antiquarian's a May foal too, but we'll get to Antiquarian in a minute. But Anna Marie is most likely younger than, even by as much as 4 months, than 3.5 months, than most of these horses. So he is worming his way into my heart. And he's one of those horses, actually, if you draw a line through his two wet track efforts, and that'll, take a marker and blot out that allowance try and the Risen Star, at where he wasn't awful. But, I mean, his two worst efforts came on, lesser efforts came on a wet track, on sloppy seal tracks. And like West Saratoga, a horse that not only broke his maiden at Churchill, but has got a stake win at Churchill. And again, you got that going for you, which is nice. Yeah. Anna Marie, I will not be surprised if I will not be surprised if I really wrap my arms around this one going forward. I was impressed. We mentioned Tuscan Gold. I'm sure Chad satisfied with that try, and he'll go forward. We'll see. I mean, that's a stakes debut, and he got beat a length and change. And Tuscan Gold, Track Phantom, and Common Defense. I mean, Common Defense was beat four lengths for everything. But the top four, they all come away. Antiquarian, who I picked on a price, really as a price play, 17-1. He broke through the gate, and if the camera lingered on Johnny, but Johnny was doubled over with his hands on his knees trying to gather himself. I don't think breaking through the gate didn't do Antiquarian any favors, and he did not run badly here. He from a fig standpoint, ran a new career best with a bunch of things. Obscuring that he ran okay. I do not just dismiss him. Don Little Jr. Thought immediately after the race, or yesterday morning, I guess, they may take a tried and true centennial path. Those of you that know the centennial path, you guessed it. Peter Pan and Belmont. Yeah, I think that's their initial reaction. they've done that a few times. So that's where you may see Antiquarian. And I have not seen McPeak. I have not seen a McPeak thought yet about Common Defense, who was shadowing Track Phantom and ran well. the rest of that chart, Hall of Fame was not good. And they're going to have to regroup with him. Agate Road might have been better off going to Turfway, as it turned out. He really did not, you know, he was the back of the pack, and he made up very mild, made up some ground past a couple of tiring horses. Real Men Violin, mid-pack early and backed up. That's about it. But the top four, particularly, all come away good. Let's talk about the Oaks. And, I mean, not to take away from the winner. We'll talk to Brad Cox later. It was, that was some, there was like a 10-minute interval. Tarifa, and First Mission. They won almost simultaneously. I think was it First Mission first? It was with Frank and Patrick McGooey, and they said, "Look, there's the Essex," and we looked up, and First Mission was taking over and drawing off, and then I think minutes later, here was Tarifa, who overpowered Our Pretty Woman, who ran very well in here, was, you know, figuring to be Lone Speed, and was, but set real fractions. The disappointment here, obviously, was Intricate, and I talked to Brendan Walsh yesterday in the paddock, and Intricate, no major issue. She didn't bleed. She didn't entrap, but she did come back with all kinds of mucus and crap in her lungs. So Brendan was really disappointed. I mean, as you would imagine, because she had been coming into this seemingly really well. They were very excited about Intricate in this spot. So Brendan said yesterday that they'll get home and just assume if everything goes well, if she trains all right and there's no, you know, there's nothing lingering or, you know, any ill effects, quote unquote, she will go in the Kentucky Oaks. She's got plenty of points. Yeah, points are not an issue. In fact, I keep having to go to this stack of paperwork. Why don't you take the point standings out, Steve, and put it in your lap? Yeah, here we go. Yeah, she's got 45 points, and so assuming everything's good, you know, those of you that believed in Intricate, don't panic. This was not a talent level miscue. This was a lung glop in the lungs issue. All right. But meanwhile, Tarifa and Our Pretty Woman, they march on. Vivi's Dream was okay. Was beaten basically five. The top pair basically got away. In the paddock. Dallas Stewart had a very good day. We'll talk about Dallas, I'm sure. But the line of the morning, or the line of the pre-race, accommodate Eva. And Dallas is walking around with her, and he looked over. I forget who I was standing with, but he said, I got the lab bread. He goes, I should get a weight allowance. It's pretty funny. She ran okay. She was fourth. She could have probably beaten up on her own kind, but she tried the heavy heads, and why not? It certainly was the story, and a great story at that, of the Dell Ohms, and their attempt with Touch Upon a Star. And not to take anything away from Red Route 1. I got plenty of respect. I didn't have him on a ticket, but I respect them. Touch Upon a Star ran his absolute heart out and just gets corralled late. And Red Route 1 and Joel Rosario, who a very good ride, saving ground inside, as you figured to do. And speaking of rides, very interesting. There's a bunch of things going on in here. Touch Upon a Star did what you figured. He was being attended to by Best Actor and Flavian Pratt. And Touch Upon a Star put him away. And just, you know, that was just enough to make him vulnerable late. And Red Route 1, meanwhile, I bet Velociter, the Gary Shearer horse, for the old Wellings. And I figured he was going to get a super trip behind the speed, and that's exactly what transpired. And I thought for a little bit, I thought, you know, might have a real shot here. And then you could see he was weakening, and Touch Upon a Star basically started to pull away. And then here came Red Route 1 and Money Supply. But if you watch that race over, you'll see something. Davy Cohen absolutely deserves credit for doing a couple of different clever things. For starters, when he heard Red Route 1 approaching on his inside up the rail, and at that point, Velociter was maybe in the three path, Dave Cohen starts to move to the rail. He was not going to just let Red Route 1, you know, have the rail. And so he brings Velociter in, but Red Route 1 moving, you know, with alacrity with Rosario gets past, and then kicks it, you know, then he had a seam and kicks out and tackles Touch Upon a Star. Meanwhile, Cohen has to get back into, you know, into gear to fend off Money Supply. Money Supply gets by, but Velociter very easily could have been fifth here. And instead, Cohen absolutely rides hard to the wire and wins the photo for fourth. Gets to, you know, here's Best Actor. And that to me, I was really impressed with Cohen's effort here. He was doing three things at once. And so Superfecta bettors, you know, you were rewarded too, because Best Actor was 5-2 and Velociter was 19-1. So I was pleased with, I mean, even though Red Route 1, I would have been okay had Touch Upon a Star. I could have kept going in terms of the multis, but that's all right. I'm very busy. Let's talk about that effort. Holy cow. When we talked to Chad, single-handedly, Chad helping cloud computing, right? This is a Pennsylvania bred that Glenn Brock and Mark Toothaker crafted, and he was so far the best in this, and now has put two really good efforts together, this four-year-old, to start the year. I love the fact that he's out of a Kissin' Chris mare. How about that? This is Team Hanley and Richard Schumerhorn. And I think there's another partner, right? Yeah, Paul Braver. So Chad's got himself another big, older turf horse. And I'm very busy. He announced himself with that good effort. in the, well, actually in the Hill Prince, but putting together a nice resume. I'm very busy. Really nice. This is the kind of horse that Chad just excels with. How much was he? $135,000 at OBS March. Oh, I think we got lost for a second, and the signal, I think, dropped. Are we all right? All right. Yeah, we're back. The Turf Mile Allowance, Cali Coco, who was actually a very attractive price, paid $15.20 and wired it. A tremendous effort by the Oregon bred Devil's Harvest, Kent Knutson. And I don't know anything about Kent Knutson, other than I think he's based. I think he's like a Louisiana Downs Evangeline outfit. And I talked to his assistant, and this horse had a terrific meet. The only winner for Knutson. Knutson wins. I mean, He had a rough meet. Was one for something. One for 24. One for 24 coming in, but he had 4 seconds coming into Saturday, and this horse gives him five. Devil's Harvest. I thought it was a great. I looked down, I saw Oregon, and I immediately took an interest. And Devil's Harvest, second here, and kind of juiced the exotics nicely, because the favorite Athens Moon really did not run at 3-2. So and this is what made Saturday so much fun. There just was one. It was one interesting and fun result after another. Shane Wilson is going to join us, and he might be able to come up to the press box. We're going to have shortly, I should have Mike Diliberto here. And one of the other stories, how about Pat Devereaux winning the Crescent City Derby with El Dinero? It was a really good name. This is an El Deal gelding that was bred by Adcock and Warnell. and was a absolute bargain. $36,000. I mean, and it's funny because that actually that might seem like, you know, a fair amount of money for the Texas Thoroughbred Association sale, but the horse has now made $300,000 and change. So he's never been off the board, and it just was dominant in here under James Graham. Owners John Tavermina, Leslie Rohr, and Tab Enterprise, LLC. El Dinero, 4 wins, 9 starts, 3 seconds, 2/3. Never off the board at Evangeline, Louisiana Downs, Delta, and Fairgrounds. This is what you call, named for money. That's the best part of it. This is an ATM on four hooves. El Dinero, your next, not even next Louisiana star. I mean, he's now won 1, 2, 3, 4 Louisiana bred stakes. And the program, this is some advertisement for the program down here. 4 racetracks in this state. You know, these trainers, like Pat Devereaux, they don't have to leave. They can just make a living here and be with their families. And that's why I started the show the way I did. This is a special atmosphere for the game and for its participants locally, regionally. Cannot be big. The Tom Benson, speaking of regional, that was also Chad. Delahaye, you know, who figured, right? I mean, Delahaye was hardly a surprise. What did I, where did Delahaye go? I had to print, I had to print the charts on both sides. So I'm a little, I don't have the individual stakes laid out in front of me. Delahaye was 7-2 and the second choice. Ovra ran well, but settled for fourth as the 5-2 favorite. Spirit and Glory really didn't offer much at 7-2. But Delahaye, if you keyed Delahaye with some prices, you did okay. You had a 29-1 shot that joined the dance for Dallas. I mean, Dallas is unbelievable. And then not so close, the Norm Cassie. Norm was all smiles. He was happy with that effort on the front end, a 26-1. So if you keyed Chad, 50 Cent Try paid $818. How about that? Yeah, Super paid $1,141 with the favorite fourth. It was that's the kind of day it was. I mean, there was even when you had logical horses win, you know you had horses that if you employed them right, you know you did well. It really. I called it idyllic. It was just a fabulous day. Amos was a winner, right? What's more fairgrounds than Amos winning on a big day? You know my theory. My theory is, big names, big locals. You know, watch for them on big days, and Amos came through. He's some character. By the way, the best part of Saturday with Amos, because it was exactly my intent when I passed along his Kentucky barb. So the horse wins, and he goes out onto the track, and now he's coming back, and he passes right in front of me. To go to the winner's circle, and he says, "Yeah, way to go, Vic. You threw me under the bus, did you?" So I started to laugh. He says, "It's 8:02, and my phone's lighting up. Everybody giving him the business. So great. Oh my God. I laughed. It's exactly what my intention was to to have all the Kentucky owners and rooters to get after Amos. Ah, too good. Hold on, let me answer Shane Wilson. This is always the challenge. It's funny, even people who have been coming here for years, they don't all necessarily know how to get up to this press box. It's a kind of a funny little trip. So let me explain to him. Because I got, and I'm just watching for Mikey Diliberto too, who's going to come up here any minute, and here I'm going to suggest that Shane come up about like 9:45 maybe. Yeah. All right. There we go. All right, that's it. Bear with me. just like I thought. Perfect. All right, that's perfect. Perfect. All right, so we're going to see Shane Wilson in about half an hour, and we'll talk about Britlin and talk about his first fairgrounds training title and the fabulous meet that he had. All right, so now I'm just waiting for Mike to come up. So while we do that, here, let me get the rest of the get some of the other stake results. I mentioned First Mission winning that Essex, got 100 buyer, and when we talk to Brad Cox, obviously we'll see what, you know, what's on his mind in terms of a campaign. And of course, last year's Lexington winner just missed in the Clark, and basically put a line through the Pegasus miscue, and so he gets his 4-year-old season rolling with that win. And you know, that's a performance along with actually with I'm Very Busy, and there's been a couple of others, right? You had Rocket Can last week. You know, everybody gets panic stricken when you know some of the top 3-year-olds retire to go to the Stallion Barn, but you know, you forget that there's horses that have been out of sight, out of mind, and you know, getting them going. Don't worry, the handicap division and the older turfers, the divisions will sort themselves out. There'll be plenty of stars. So here on back-to-back weekends at Oaklawn, you get Rocket Can and First Mission, both flexing their muscles. So 100 buyer for First Mission. And then Nash, if you missed it, if you did not see Nash, Nash was very good. And 85 buyer for Nash in that allowance win. So we'll see what Brad, when we talk to Brad later, we'll see what his plan is. I mean, because Nash, you know, feels like he's going somewhere. We'll wait and see. Didn't really get a chance on Friday to talk about those two Laurel stakes, but we do have to get a hold of Gary Capuano, who won another stake, that nice Copper Tax. Rose Petal Stable, Copper Bullet Colt, also a May foal, in a photo with Inveigled, Jane Sabelli, for Mark Greer. Copper Tax. Who didn't we was he in the Sam Davis? Was he in the Sam Davis? I don't have PPs, but I think he was in the Sam Davis. And in the other stake, that was the private terms in the Beyond the Wire for the 3-year-old fillies, Determined Driver, Forrest Boyce, for Phil Schoenthal and Dee Hatman. This is the Maryland bread by Dialed In by Determined Stud. So that was that. What else? And where's Mikey? Frack Dancer, a Frack Daddy 3-year-old with Jaramillo won the Texas Glitter. This is from Mike DePaula. Hat full of owners, John Russell, New Top Stables, Joe DiPaolo, and Mike himself, all partnered up, wire-to-wire winner of the Texas Glitter. Good. All right. And since we're just killing time, waiting for Diliberto, and here he comes now, striding in, right on time with a big smile. He's always got a big smile.